Thanks for joining us. Calls and questions are starting to roll in, but if you press 1 on your phone right now, if you've got a question, a comment, a topic, you still have a good chance of getting through. The longer you wait, the harder it is to get through the question. So if you want to get in, press 1 now. We'll get to those calls. I said yesterday that we were going to be doing the Pittsburgh Power Hour today with Bruce Mallinson and his technicians and engineers. I had my days mixed up. That's tomorrow we'll be doing that. So we'll send out a text message to let you know it is going to be an hour earlier, and we are going to do 3 hours. So plan on joining us for that tomorrow. Let's get started today. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business
and Beyond,
the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The number to join us, well, the website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers. Whatever you have a question about, we'll tackle it here on the show. Just pick up the phone and join us. I'm going to get to those calls in just a little bit. You know, I've been off of Facebook since February, so I still like to post on Facebook. I think it's still a great place to share good information. I just can't get sucked into reading the posts. You know, the spending a lot of time on there was just really a drain on my resources, so I decided to not log in. But I still like to post. I know there are a lot of people on there. It's a good place for information. So I've been posting things here and there, and I'm going to continue doing that. So I posted yesterday a really good article, I believe, that gave the other side of the story about flu vaccines. It was well-written, good facts. You could follow the research backwards. It was well-documented. And I logged into Facebook, sure, that it posted correctly, and I got sucked into reading the comments, and I almost responded, and then I came to my senses. But there was a point in there that I'd really like to cover because I think it's relevant to a lot of things. So one of the medical websites that I actually use for a lot of my research is from Dr. Mercola. It's Mercola.com. And he is controversial, but I'm not sure why. I am sure why. He is a medical doctor, has been for decades, has a stellar record when he was in private practice, but he realized that what he was doing was not working. The standard medical advice of take a drug, surgery next, eat whatever you want, it doesn't matter, or the bad advice of low-fat diets that for years. He's also has been a long-distance runner for a long time. So he decided to move out of private practice and try to do things that really made a difference. The problem with that is it goes against all of the standard medical advice. And there are a lot of companies out a lot of money off of the standard medical advice. He is one of, in fact, he may be the number one site in the U.S. for medical research issues, nutrition, things like that. Very, very popular website, which also makes him a target. And there's a lot of money out there to try to discredit doctors like this, not just Dr. Mercola, but the author of Wheat Belly and Grain Brain and the diet doctor in Sweden and so many other doctors who have come out against standard medical advice and are recommending nutrition to fix your problems, they are being brought up on charges by some of these medical review boards, and they can't make anything stick because these guys are doing nothing but good. So you can find all kinds of information on the internet that will call these doctors quacks. And when I posted this article about vaccinations, it was from the Mercola website. And somebody made a comment that they can't believe that I would use that as a source because Dr. Mercola has proven 10 reasons or whatever from some article he found about why you shouldn't take Dr. Mercola's advice. Now, here's the thing. The reason I almost responded was because this was from a very long-time listener who is really intelligent, runs a great trucking operation. He's young, but he's sharp, and I've learned some things from him over the years. And I was shocked that that was his only response. Dr. Mercola is a quack. Well, I've had those same things said about me. Dr. Mercola is incredible because he sells products on his website. Yes, he does. Lots of products. So do I. I've had that same thing said about me. Why is it that we're okay with all these major health organizations that are funded by big pharmaceuticals, big agriculture, big food, and the government? We're okay with all that money. We don't think they're biased at all. But let somebody who is giving advice make money somewhere, and all of a sudden, they're a quack and they're just in it for the money. Well, we all go to work to make money. We all do different things. So there is going to be money involved. Calling somebody a quack and saying they're just in it for the money, give me a fact or give me one of their recommendations and tell me why it's wrong. Then we can have an intelligent discussion. That's what I've asked for years when people criticize me as a person, as an individual, that I'm an idiot, that I don't know what I'm talking about, that I'm biased, that I'm just in it for the money. Those statements are meaningless. Call me and tell me what I have said that is wrong, and then we could discuss that factually. The same thing goes, I have read his books, I follow his blog, I use his website for research. There is about 10% of what I've read of his that is, it's out there. It's even a little weird for me when I first read about it. But follow the research and then figure out for yourself if his advice is good or not. I think it's outstanding advice. I think that he does a lot of research. I think he's willing to look at things that he doesn't understand and go do the research and talk to other experts and then make an opinion. I also think he's willing to change his opinion when the facts verify that there is something else out there. So instead of just calling somebody a quack, or finding 10 articles on the internet that say he's a quack. Like I said, he's a big target. I've become a target in the trucking industry. Call me and let's talk about facts. Tell me what I've said that's wrong and we can discuss it. Prove to me that it's wrong. The same thing goes for other people on the internet. Like I say, it's amazing that we see no problem with all kinds of big money behind our standard medical advice. And that just seems normal. There was a group that was started recently called the Global Energy Balance Group, or I forget the last word in there, but their message was, don't worry about what you eat, exercise more, and you'll be healthy. Now, that is really backwards from everything all the medical research tells us now. The medical research says, diet is 80 to 90% of your health, and exercise is just an added benefit. You can't out-exercise a bad diet. I posted a really good article again, to show a very well-trained, well-nourished, supposedly well-nourished endurance athlete who ended up pre-diabetic. And he turned it around with the proper diet, high fat, moderate protein, low carb, and now he's breaking all of his own records. There are lots of stories of this. So tell me, or anybody else, what is wrong about the information, and then talk about facts. Don't just label somebody. So back to the Global Energy Network, their message is wrong. It was odd. It turns out, and it didn't take long to figure it out, that this whole Global Energy Network group, whatever they are, Global Energy Balance, was founded by the big soft drink manufacturers, fully funded by the big soft drink manufacturers. And they were pushing an agenda that said your diet doesn't matter, and that's just not what the medical data shows. Well, now that it's been discovered how this group got started, where it gets all its money, the group is disbanding now. They'll just go start up some other group, give it an official name, make it look like it's a grassroots effort, and it's all going to be paid for by these big pharmaceutical, big agriculture, big food companies. There's money behind everything. Look at where the money comes from, and then look at the data and decide for yourself. I'm going to get to a break. When I come back, we'll get right to your phone calls. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. If you need any help from us off the air, we have a great Tribe Care team that's there to help. Give them a call, 855-800-FUEL, 855-800-3835. There's lots of things you should be doing right now, and we can help you with them. Accounting, getting your year caught up, your taxes, we can help you with all of that. And it's time to really get serious and get signed up for the 2016 CMC. Just because it's 2016, it's not that far off. We're about 6 months out, which isn't a lot of time. This is a big event. You don't want to miss it this year. Some exciting announcements coming up on that in the next couple weeks. But give us a call, 855-800-3835. Let's get to some phone calls. Let's go to Ohio. Herschel, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Funny you would open the way that you did, because my comment actually has to do with Dr. McCullough.
Oh, interesting.
You, of course, know the book, Effortless Healing.
Yeah.
And I get his newsletter and everything, and you're right. He has times where he goes out on the edge a little bit, but it's extremely interesting. I think it's good stuff. Do you guys get PBS out there in Oregon on television?
We do.
Look on PBS. I just caught it a couple of nights ago. I was just scanning through the guide, and there's actually a whole show that is Dr. McCullough, and it's even called Effortless Healing, right on PBS.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, I haven't got to watch it yet, but I just caught it, so I set it to record, so it's pretty interesting.
Absolutely. So let's talk about that for a second. The book Effortless Healing. Is there anything in that book that you could really find to dispute and say that it wouldn't improve your health? Even if you don't believe in some of the things that we've just never known anything about as far as grounding and earthing and some of those things that are a little out there, but there's research behind them. The facts seem to make sense. And what's the worst thing that could happen if you spent more time walking around barefoot, you know, in wet grass or early in the morning or at the beach? There's no downside to doing any of those things. So instead of people calling him a quack, I wish they would just call me and say, here's what he said and here's why he's wrong. Because I don't know how you could find anything in that book that you could even dispute.
Well, no, you can't. And it's been a number of years ago now, somewhere in the 5 year ago range, I was having chronic headache. I mean, just not that you couldn't live with it, but to the point it was extremely aggravating. So I went to a doc, and I always try to go to a DO just because they're a little more normal. They're not quite as bad on the pharmaceuticals.
Right.
So DO and everything, and he decided that what I had was a chronic migraine problem, and he gave me something called nortriptyline. It's really an antidepressant if you take enough of it, but this was only a 10 milligram dose. So he said that will curb the migraine, and it did. Well, as all of us do, creature of habit, it worked, so I just kept doing it. Well, I have had a regularity problem for eons, so I got on the computer a couple of nights ago, week and a half or so, something like that. Side effects of nortriptyline 10 milligram, just to see what would pop up. And sure enough, regularity
right.
was one of them. So I thought, okay, I'm just going to stop and see what happens. Well, that was a week and a half
right.
ago. That is getting better, and the headaches haven't come back. So, yeah, maybe Mercola's out there a little bit, walking around barefoot, but I'd rather walk around barefoot than take a pharmaceutical that's going to mess up three other things.
Well, and that is the standard response from every doctor. You have a symptom, but it's too difficult to go figure out what's causing the symptom. It's easy and profitable to just prescribe a drug that covers up the symptom. Now, you're right. It's probably going to cause two or three other symptoms we don't want, but they'll find a drug for those, too.
Well, and I know I've talked to you about the keto before. I am not a keto ace. I'm still struggling and playing around with it. I still haven't got it mastered for the weight loss side. But as far as how I feel side, oh, man, it's just unbelievable. So I got to be getting a little bit right. Is that possible? That's why the headaches haven't come back? I got to believe that it is.
Absolutely. There's no question in my mind that we are finally starting to realize, re-understand something that our ancestors knew forever, that everything in our body, every ailment, everything we feel, all of those things are related to diet. 90-plus
right.
percent of it is diet. So there's no question when you get your diet right and things go away, that was the reason. That was there. Now we may not understand what it was, but somewhere you got down to the root cause of the migraines, not covering up the pain, not covering up the symptom. Pain is our friend. Pain tells us something is wrong, and yet the first thing we've been told to do when we have pain is take something to cover up the pain. Well, now we
right.
don't know anything's wrong anymore. So, like
you
said, we just go on for years and years just covering up the symptom. But whatever you changed in your diet fixed the underlying cause.
Right. You also had another one on there I noticed last night comparing putting keto and paleo together. I read it. I understood the keto part, but I didn't really get a whole lot on what you do to put paleo in it and what that means.
Yeah, and that's a really good question. This is a topic that I've been thinking a lot about and talking a lot about. So let's talk about what paleo itself is. Paleo, in general, we don't need to argue about whether or not you can have milk or if you can have this kind of, you know, sweet potato or whatever. Everybody's going to argue the details. But paleo is about getting as close as we can to our ancestral diet. Paleo, caveman, you know, all of those things are kind of the same idea, that we need to get back to a diet that was as close to as we can what we evolved with for hundreds of thousands or millions of years, however long you think we've been here, getting back to eating a natural way before we started manufacturing food. So that's the idea behind paleo, eating real whole food, the best quality we can find, and the more we move towards that, the healthier we're going to be. My example, though, is if you separate the two, you could eat a ketogenic diet and be perfect about your macronutrients, lose all the weight, probably feel a lot better, solve many of your short-term issues, but it wouldn't necessarily be healthy. If you're eating all factory beef, if you're eating, you know, lots of omega-6 oils and rancid oils, and, you know, eating a lot of cheap processed meat and cheap processed cheese, cheap factory eggs, you would be ketogenic, you would lose the weight, you would feel a lot better, but it's not necessarily healthy long term. So paleo doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be ketogenic. There are people that eat a paleo diet that's still fairly high in carbs because they eat a lot of sweet potatoes, they eat fruit. All those are natural foods. So my idea is a combination of the two. I just need to come up with a cool word for it, where you do eat paleo, good whole real food, foods that we ate for very, very long times and we were healthy, but you also use a ketogenic approach where you keep your macronutrient balance correct. So I really think that the best way to eat is a combination of those two.
Paleogenic, but you'd probably get in trouble for saying that.
Yeah, yeah. That you know, like I say, call it caveman, call it our ancestral diet, call it paleo, paleogenic. Those, and like I say, we need a good word. Well, actually, we probably don't need a good word for it. That's when it's going to start getting screwed up. Paleo is being used now to sell products that aren't necessarily healthy, but people see paleo on them, just like gluten-free and all the other labels, natural, organic. They're just labels. They're just marketing. Ketogenic, I see now people are making supplements to try to cash in on the fact that ketogenic diets are starting to be understood and they work. But when we put these labels on things is when we're more likely to end up bastardizing the whole thing. But I would like a word to refer to it. Keleo, pedo, I don't know. We'll come up with something. I'm going to get to a break. Stick around. We'll be right back. The website is letstruck.com. If you need any help from us, give us a call at 855-800-FUEL. That's a number off the air for our Tribe Care team. 855-800-3835. We'll be right back. Kevin Rothbard. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. I'm going to head off to New Jersey. Nick, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Kevin. I want to make a quick comment on your monologue. It's pretty easy to sum it all up that society in general has become lazy. we take things for face value because it's easier to do that than it is to do the hard work and do the research ourselves. And if we start doing the research ourselves, we start determining where they got their information and their research, who it was funded by. You know, you look at a label that says this is a healthy item, but you flip the package over and you do the research on it and you find out it's probably one of the most unhealthy things to put in your body. But most people
exactly.
see it's healthy, they stick it in the cart. It's do the hard work. The more work you put in, the better result you will get out. Very
yeah,
simple.
You're absolutely right. And I, you know, I've talked about this in the past, the split we are seeing in society. You know, people talk about, you know, the rich get richer, the poor get poorer, and they think it's some big conspiracy. It's not. The people who have money keep doing what they do that got them money in the first place, and the people who are broke keep doing what they did to get broke. And the same thing is happening now in so many areas of society when it comes to health. There are people who are doing the hard work, not listening to the standard advice because we've proven over and over it's wrong, and they're doing the hard work and they're getting healthier. Yet the majority of the population keeps getting unhealthier. We're going to see it in business, money, health, everywhere, because there's going to be a small part of the population that is going to do what you just said. They're going to do the work, and they're going to learn the truth out of all the noise. But the majority of the population is going to listen to the 30-second sound bites, and they'll be flip-flopping all over the place because they change constantly.
Exactly. And then that brings me to my question. It's about taxes. It's getting that time of the year, and I've went through all of my numbers, and I'm looking at doing some more bigger-end item upgrades. I want to look at doing the Flow Below, the Fast System, and things of that nature, but I remember months and months back you spoke something about they've changed the limit of what we can 179 off or something about that. Can you run over those?
Yeah, so how much have you spent this year on things we would have to depreciate? So, like the Flow Below, the Fast, we can expense those. We don't have to worry about Section 179 at all on those or depreciation. So where this would come in would be buying a truck, buying a trailer, buying an APU, doing an in-frame or a major overhaul. You can do all the upgrades you want and just expense them. You don't have to worry about this at all. But to answer your question, the limit in 2014 was $500,000. I mean, we could write off crazy amounts of depreciation up front. And now all of a sudden it's $25,000. I mean, talk about a stupid flip-flop. And they've done this the entire 25 years I've been involved in tax returns. This number, every time the Republicans are in place, they will jack the number back up. And every time the Democrats get back into control, it only takes, you know, a couple years and we're back down again. And it's just crazy because you can't do any planning. So 2015 and beyond right now, it looks like we're stuck with just being able to take $25,000 of depreciation up front.
Okay, and I did all of my big, big ticket stuff last year, buying the truck, all of that, December of last year. Everything this year, the only large expense has been tires. And I figured I was going to 179 them off and be done with it.
Like
I said, other than that, I was just wondering if, you know, adding the Fast, the Flow Below, all of that, you know, doing projected numbers, you know, through profit gauges and all of that, just looking at everything, it puts me into a lower tax bracket. When you calculate it all out, and it's worth it doing it at the end of the year. Everything's done, and I get a great start for next year.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is the time of year to be doing this. So congratulations. You know your numbers. You're going to be able to make a difference by doing good tax planning. There's one more thing I want to throw out, and I'm always a little hesitant to talk about this because I'm a pretty firm believer in that small business and individuals should be very, very careful with credit. We should operate on cash flow, but there are times when I will use credit to my advantage. For example, you know, if you've got good credit, you'll get offers of 0% interest for 6 months. You get, you know, cash back rewards. You get bonus points by using credit cards. They want you to go use it because they know, we can come back to the same thing we were just talking about, most of the population will use the credit, get in trouble, end up paying a ton of interest, and that's how credit cards companies make money. But there's a small group who will be disciplined, and this is the time of year that could come into play. If you have a good credit card with either a very low interest rate or, you know, a zero interest rate because of some sort of an offer and they offer points, you could wait until December 31st, buy all of your upgrades, put it on that credit card, which means you haven't taken a penny out of your pocket yet, take advantage of either the low or the free interest, and still get to deduct all of the expenses on this year, even though you didn't spend any money.
That was right exactly what I was going to do, get cash back rewards, and right on, head on the nail on the head of exactly what it was I was planning.
Yeah,
perfect. And my question, I guess, with that, with the one item I'm looking at, the flow below, I've seen out here on the road there is a device that is going on the steer tire now made by Flow Below, but I don't see that on your website. Can you give me any more information about it and what it does?
I can't. I actually need to get caught up with Flow Below because we've just been busy on a lot of things, and they have too. They've got a couple new products, some out, some getting close to coming out. So we are probably going to get them on the show here soon to talk about some of those.
Okay. I'll just reach out to them directly then to find it out. But definitely appreciate your help. Love that you offer, you know, fuel gauges for those people that want to do it for free. Do that. You know, it's simple work, but in the end it works out, you know, and it is some of the hard work. And then profit gauges, absolutely love it. It is what has saved my business because it allows me to know my numbers at a moment's, pull it up on my phone, on a tablet, on anything, and it's instantly I can look at it to see where I have a problem.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the kind words on that. Profit gauges is kind of my baby. And then at the end, I had to hand it over to Aaron and the development team, and they have nurtured it and made it better than I ever dreamed of. Now, this is a program that goes all the way back to the early 90s that I had the idea. I worked on it here and there. I released it back in 2005, actually. And then we started moving it online. So like I say, that's kind of my baby, and I'm very, very happy where our development team has taken it to. So if you haven't seen it, check it out. We have a free 30-day trial. You get to try it out. No risk whatsoever. See what you think. It's at letstruck.com. Let's go to Massachusetts. Carl, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How are you doing today?
Good. What can I help you with?
I got a quick question. I currently been doing trucking for 3 years. I was looking to start in my own operator, being an own operator, and I've been doing research on Landstar for the past year. But I was looking to start in this in March, but I was looking at a 2007 Peterbilt 387 with no DPF and no EGR, a 13-speed.
Wait a minute. Why does it not have EGR?
I don't know. I'm just looking at it. I got to pull down a website right now.
Okay. Hold that thought, because that's important, and we need to clear that part up. So, because my first question was going to be, why an 07? We'll talk about that when we get back. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. A quick heads up, we're heading into the fourth segment on the first hour, so I'm going to say all those things I always say at the end of the show. I'm done, goodbye, I got to get out of here. Don't hang up, we're going to come back and do another hour. I'm looking at the calls here. We've got quite a few questions, but there, I think we could still get to a couple more. So if you've got a question, a comment, a topic, the sooner you press 1 on your phone, the better the odds are that we'll be able to get to you. So here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment. I'm going to get right back to the phone calls. I was talking with Carl in Massachusetts. So, Carl, here's the thing. 07s, unless they were gliders, and I don't think anybody was building Pete gliders back in, well, I guess it's possible if it was a glider. Pretty low odds of that. Otherwise, it was wait a minute. Let me ask one more question. Does it have a cat engine?
Yes, as a Cat C-15.
Okay, so that's why they're able to say no EGR, but that doesn't mean it's non-emission. Chose a different form of emission control instead of EGR, which is exhaust gas recirculation, and it all happens on the outside of an engine. We have we return the exhaust gas, we run it through a cooler, we have an EGR valve that diverts it back to the intake. Cat used a technology that was proprietary to them that they call ACERT, and it does the same thing as EGR. It puts the exhaust gas back into the combustion chamber. It just does it all internally using the valves to do it. But they're both problems. Cat has a few less problems, I think, but they're still a problem engine. They're performance isn't great, fuel economy isn't great, they're difficult to work on. So I, just so you know, I never recommend these engines. I wouldn't own one, so I would never be able to recommend somebody buy one. So somebody, a lot of times people will call me and say, well, I'm going to buy it, so just tell me, is this one better or this one? And I won't. Anytime I say that, it would be an endorsement of, yes, you should go buy that truck. And I wouldn't do it. I couldn't recommend it to anybody else. And I know a lot of people want me to come out and change. And the only thing I've ever said is if I had to own an emission engine, if I had to, if somebody put a gun to my head and said, you have to do it, it would be a DD15 in a Cascadia. After looking at all the research, all the reports, all these years, that is the least problematic of the engines. Still not my first choice, though. I would just rather go out and have a non-emission engine.
Yeah, that's what I was looking for, was non-emission. You know, I mean, this is my first time doing as an owner-operator. But I was looking to, you know, buy something, you know, reasonable price.
Here's an interesting thing. Truck dealers know that these trucks are a problem. They know it, and they're getting tricky with their marketing. They're calling 07 engines non-emission when that's not true. They're just non-DPF. The emission started in 04. Now, they went a step further here calling it non-EGR. Well, yeah, technically they're right. It's not EGR, but it's ACERT. which was really just as bad. That was the first round of emissions. So skip this. You either need to look at gliders, and in a glider you can look at any year, or you need to look at pre-04 trucks, 03 and earlier. Let's head off to Rhode Island. Kevin, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Kevin. I talked to you about a year or so, about a year ago. I purchased a cab over. I have a water delivery business in Rhode Island, swimming pool filling. And we had purchased a Ford about a year before that. It's a 94 LN 9000 Aero Max. I had bought that. It had less than 100,000 miles on it. And from a local guy who'd been running that, we've had great, great luck with all of our non-emission engines, specifically the other Freightliner that we have, 95 FLD 120, 12.7 Detroit, low horsepower, 365, 390, I believe. I found another one. We were looking for another 12.7, and I came across another local truck. It's a 99 FLD 120. And it had 330,000 miles on the truck. It was a little bit beat up cosmetically. Cab looked a little rough. Hood had been patched up probably half a dozen times. And the plan was to take that drive line out of there and build a glider. Ultimately, I was listening to one of your shows, and you had made a suggestion that not every truck is a good candidate for a glider. If you have a real good truck, maybe just replace the cab or the hood. And do whatever other repairs are necessary at that time. I ended up finding a military cab, brand new, on the pallet in Ohio, set up full instruments, fully decked out cab with air conditioning, wired for a D-Deck 4. It's an FLD 120. I believe they call it an M317 or 371 or something. I ended up buying the brand new cab and a brand new hood for under $3,000.
Wow.
I paid $1,975 for the cab, loaded cab, and I paid $1,000 for the hood. I ran out to Ohio to get it. It's painted camouflage, but inside of the truck still has the vinyl over the seats. It is brand new. The cab is set up for an automatic, but, I can change that over. Should this be plug and play? Because both of these vehicles have Detroit power.
I'd love to say it should be plug and play, but there's no guarantee. That we always run into something we don't foresee in a project like this, but you didn't buy those, you stole those. That is an unbelievable price.
The tractor, I bought the tractor, knee-deep in rubber, like I said, 336,000 or something like that on it, 10-speed, 12.7, it's a 470-horse engine, air-conditioned, blows cold, all the stuff worked, but it was really a rough, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'd put the cab at a 2, maybe, just rough, and like I said, the hood had been repaired a lot. So when I came across these, I said, this was what a perfect candidate. And for the money, I'm having a tough time. I had a tough time passing it up. I said, we wanted another truck with the small sleeper, but for this kind of money, most of our work is local work with the water tankers. So, not exactly what I wanted, but for this price, I couldn't pass it up.
So, oh, absolutely. I mean, you're going to end up with an amazing truck here at a really amazing price. So I don't think you're going to run into any major issues wiring this. And, there are wiring harnesses available if you do run into something. So I think you're going to see that this goes pretty easily.
I have another question. I bought the truck, right? I paid $4,500 for the tractor, too. So, I'm going to be into this whole project under $10,000.
Wow.
So the other question is, can I get from Freightliner another ID tag for the door reflecting my original VIN number?
That's a good question, and I am not up on those kind of issues at all. you know, states are always different about how they handle title issues and VIN numbers. I think I would start with your, and I know this is painful, but I would start with your local DMV and
okay.
ask them, you know, there may be, it may end up being a salvage title. Again, I don't know how they're going to handle this, but I would start with your local DMV and see if you can find any answers there.
Okay. One last question before you cut me loose. What should I? I'm looking at the scan gauge.
Okay.
So would that be the same scan, the same unit for both that that DDEC 12.7 as it would for the 3406E in the truck that I'm driving now?
Yes, it's the same scan gauge. It comes with a reversible cable. So there's only two protocols used. So there's been two different plugs. Actually, if we get into some really new trucks now, there are three different plugs. But in those years, there were only two different plugs, and we ship it with a reversible plug. So no matter which one you had, the scan gauge is going to plug into it.
Now, was that on special also this week?
Yes, it is. Everything in the
okay.
store. Yep.
Excellent. Well, I can give Lisa a call at the other number later and just order it directly then. I'm not very good on the
yep.
computer. So.
Yeah, give us a call. We'll get that done for you. You know what? I'm looking at the clock. I'm going to take us into a break when we get to more of your calls and questions. So stick around. It's that time of year if you own a business. Oh, actually, we're not going to be coming back. We are, we're all out of time. So we'll see you back here next time, I guess. Boy, that flew by. Check out the website. It's letstruck.com, and we'll see you next time. Be safe. Be profitable. Do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, we're going to start the second hour. It looks like we're in pretty good shape on questions right now. If I think we have some more room, I'll let you know as we go. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business
and Beyond,
the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, whatever it is you've got a question about, call me up. Ask the question. I'll do my best to get you an answer. We'll tackle any here on this show. I'm going to get to those calls in just a little bit. I had a caller a while back, and he was telling a story. I'm not going to go through all the details here. I have kind of a lengthy history on this. But this was a new Volvo. You know how I feel about new trucks, but this was a new Volvo, and there was an air leak that Volvo was not able to find. He had been to a couple dealers. He wasn't getting very good service. And they actually told him that the air leak was normal, that the truck was designed to do that. which is it certainly ranks up there in somewhere in the top 10 list of the goofiest answers I've ever heard from a dealer or repair shop, but that's what they told him. It turns out, and I may get some of the details wrong here, like I say, I have a long history and I'm going to go back over it, but it sounds like the engine has let loose on this truck, gone 20,000 miles, if I'm understanding the timeline here right, on a brand new truck, and the engine grenaded, and he is going to be down 2 weeks waiting on an engine. Now, my guess is by the time this truck is actually back out on the road, problems are worked out, if they can ever be worked out, it's going to be closer to a month of lost revenue. Now, people tell me all the time, they don't want to buy an old truck. They want to buy a new truck so they have warranty. Think about that. A month of lost revenue. Now, my good owner-operators, the good owner-operators that I train, let's just call the better than average, certainly not the top 5%, but better than average owner-operators are making $75,000 a year net after all expenses. So we're talking about $6,000 a month in net revenue, net. That's after all expenses. That money, that's money that should be in their pocket. If you are down a month, that $6,000 is gone. You still had to pay all the expenses. The $6,000 in profit is gone. So what good is a warranty that costs you $6,000? I guess it's better than saying, you lost $6,000 and you had to pay for the engine too. But warranties are not all they are cracked up to be. The warranty issue was the reason the dealer finally just got frustrated and said, it's supposed to do that. Because they're not getting paid to fix it after a while and they can't figure it out. Warranty work is always the work that gets put off. It's the last work dealers want to do because they don't get paid enough for it. It's the work that usually ends up coming back with problems because the mechanics rush through it because they don't get paid enough to do it and they don't like it. I have been saying for a couple decades now that most warranties aren't worth the paper they're printed on, if you look at the bottom line, if you know your numbers. I'll take an old truck that I have to pay for repairs on any day over a new truck with a warranty. That warranty to me is virtually meaningless. So if you love the warm, fuzzy feeling of thinking you're protected with a warranty, think again. There's a huge downside. And this is just one more of hundreds, actually thousands of stories of really, really bad new trucks with disastrous breakdowns. It's not unusual. I get these kind of stories all the time. Let's get to some phone calls. Let's get started in Birmingham. Bill, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. What can I help you with today?
Yep. Hey, a couple of questions real quick. I'm driving a 2000 Freightliner Classic. I've had it for a couple of years. It's only been on the road for a year for me, but I didn't know it when I bought it, but it's got a 94 Detroit 60 in it. I was doing pretty good with the mileage, 7 or so. And I lost the turbo in March. I replaced that. Dealer replaced it. That hurt. But anyway,
yeah.
$2,500 later, no turbo on it. But so I lost an injector cup seal in late August, early September, and started getting fuel back into my radiator. And so I had that replaced. And my mileage has somewhat continued to decline since then. And last week, I lost the sensor for the turbo. And I took it back to the dealer because I thought it was a turbo going out again. And they fooled around with it for about 15 hours and said, well, it was the wrong sensor for the truck. Well, it had been running 70,000 miles with the same turbo, same sensor, and I was getting 25 to 27 PSI out of the boost. But to make it even worse, my fuel mileage this week is just really, I put a tank in this morning, and my mileage on 700 miles is like 5.4 MPG.
Yeah, and I'm looking at your history on fuel gauges, and you're right. There's definitely something going on here. I mean, this truck had a lifetime over 7, and now you're dropping under 6. You're down into the 5s, and it seems to be getting worse. So there's clearly something going wrong, and we always want to stick with the obvious. The obvious started with a turbo problem. Continued with an injector cup. So we need to focus on the top end and the turbo until we, you know, either can rule them out or figure out what the problem is. Are you doing any oil analysis?
I've got one in the cab with me right now. I need to do, I pulled a sample last weekend. I changed all the filters. I've got a Gulf Coast filter on it. I didn't hear about the OPS until after I had already put it on there. But
that's
it's done
fine.
Well,
any,
for me.
Yeah, any good bypass filter is better than not having one at all. And I'm familiar with the lab they use, so they're good oil samples. I would get the oil sample in as quick as possible. That's really going to cut down our troubleshooting time. We're going to be able to look at the oil sample and get a better idea of what's going on.
Okay. All right, one last question real quick. I had heard you,
sure.
I was listening to a show one day, and I lost you in the middle of the question, but a fellow was asking you, I've got a 13 in this one as well, and he was asking you a question about if when you flip from high to low in 5, it's jumping real hard. And I never heard the answer to that.
Yeah, there are a couple things in the transmission that can cause that. It's actually one of the more common failures on a 13, and it's not that big of a deal. Any shop that you trust should be able to solve this for you pretty quick. There are, like I say, there are a couple components in the 13 speed that can cause that to happen. So, but it's not a big deal. Like I say, very common in a 13 speed when they start to wear out. Synchronizers and a couple other things can cause this. Like any good technician, mechanic that you trust should be able to take it out, drive it, listen to it, and troubleshoot this in about an hour. So let's see. You know what? We're heading into the end of this segment here, so I'm going to take us into the break. I'm back. We're going to get to more of your calls and questions. So stick around. We've got more stuff right around the corner. To that time of year, time to start getting business taken care of. You've got to get your accounting numbers in order. You've got to start thinking, no, not thinking about taxes. You've got to start doing them. You've got to get your accounting done. Do some tax planning before the year ends. So we actually have time to make a difference. If you call me before the year's over and you have numbers and I can look at a profit and loss or a business report, I can make good recommendations on what you should be doing tax-wise. If you call me and you don't have any numbers, I could answer specific questions, but I can't really help you a whole lot. If you need anything at all done with taxes, accounting, any of that, we have a program for everybody now. Give us a call, 855-800-FUEL, 855-800-3835. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rothberg. Thank you. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. I'm going to get right back to some phone calls. I'm going to head off to Utah. George, welcome to the program.
Kevin, hey, I've got a quick question for you about keto flu. I've heard you mention it before. I had something happen to me last night that was really strange. I was just curious if that was something to do with that or if it was
okay.
I just got a bug.
So how long ago did you start eating a ketogenic diet?
About 3 months.
Oh.
And I'm 35 pounds down.
Excellent. So it could be related to the diet, but it isn't part of what we would call the keto flu. That's usually those symptoms people suffer while their body is becoming fat adapted. So we've been carb burners all our life. And then we do that switch, and your body has to relearn how to burn fat for energy. And we can go through some keto flu symptoms. Some people do, some don't. There are some easy fixes. But then there are some things later on that are different. So tell me what's going on.
Well, okay, went to bed last night around, I don't know, 1 a.m. or something like that, California time. Woke up about 3 hours later with leg cramps, and it was a bad one. I mean, leg cramps is something I've had all my life. But anyways, as soon as I started moving, I started feeling nauseous, like I was going to, Ralph all over the inside of the cab here, and then I started feeling like I was going to pass out. Started sweating really bad. Anyways, I sat up for about 35 minutes or an hour or something like that, and went back to bed. And now this morning I'm fine.
Interesting. So the leg cramps are fairly common on a ketogenic diet. One of the things that you've got to work at, and once you figure it out, it's not that difficult, but it seems pretty common. There are three minerals that really work together that control muscle function and can cause, if you're deficient in any one of the three or you're in an imbalance of the three, you will see more muscle cramps. And the three are sodium, which is just good sea salt. We'll fix that. Salt your food more. Potassium and magnesium. And if you get those three in sufficient quantities and in balance, the leg cramps will go away. So avocados are great. You know, take an avocado, put a bunch of good sea salt on it, some lime, some cilantro. Wonderful snack, very healthy, and will solve that. If you like sardines in the can.
I'm just pulling out a box of them right now.
Oh, excellent. Those kind of good whole foods, if you can get bone broth, that will really help alleviate this as well. So the leg cramps, it is those three minerals. Get them in balance and you'll be fine. And that's common. That doesn't surprise me at all. The nausea does. There's nothing about a ketogenic diet or even having those minerals in deficiency that would cause that. But here's what could have caused it. You said this was a really bad muscle cramp. Excess pain.
I almost couldn't stand up.
Excess pain will trigger nausea. That's really common. If you get that sharp, intense, quick pain, especially coming out of a sleep, that could have been the whole reason for the nausea.
Okay. That sounds illogical because, you know, like I said, you know, this morning I'm fine. I didn't, you know, I was in and out of offices and stuff yesterday when picking up a load and everything, and it was just, I could have picked up a bug or something. It was just a short one, thank God, or whatever, but. Anyways, I was just curious if, you know, what the keto flu typically would be, and you said it's in the transition, so I think I'm a little beyond that now, so.
Yeah, you're fully fat adapted, so anytime you see symptoms now of anything, and leg cramps, like I say, are a pretty common one, that's just our body telling us, hey, something's out of whack. the mineral balance is a little touchier under a keto diet because your body's not retaining a lot of water. And that's one of the reasons we feel lighter and leaner and less bloated. But when you're retaining less water, the mineral balance can get a little whacked out if you're not eating the right foods. If we're eating a good, you know, I had talked on another show about the combination of paleo and keto. And if you're eating a good paleo diet and you're getting organ meats and whole real foods, you shouldn't be mineral deficient. And this is why, you know, combining the two, I think, is really the best approach. But any time your body starts giving you signs, we should listen to it. And when you become paleo, keto, your body's signs become more accurate. We get back to knowing what's right and feeling things that we don't necessarily feel when we're on the standard American diet. So it is good that you are paying attention to those kind of symptoms. But I think it was a mineral imbalance causing the cramps. The intense pain of the cramp coming out of a dead sleep, I think, is what triggered the nausea. So keep an eye on this. Also, if you get a chance, soaking or taking baths or soaking your feet even in Epsom salts dissolved in water will really help alleviate the cramps and also help keep your body in a balance with the magnesium, because Epsom salts are magnesium sulfate and your body can absorb them right through your skin. So baths are excellent. If you can't do a bath when you're on the road, then soaking your feet, however deep you can get it in, all the way up to your knees. The more skin you expose to it, the more you're going to absorb. See, let's head off to Pennsylvania. Brian, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. I got three quick ones for you, if I may.
Sure.
The first one, I'm looking to get a radial runout gauge, and I know I've heard you say you can get them as low as in the hundreds and a good one for 200. And I poked around a little bit on Amazon and Google, and I'm seeing 400 to 500. And so I was wondering if you had a specific recommendation and if you can check, I'm not sure how they work, if you can check the assembly mounted and unmounted or only one or the other.
Okay, so I'm actually going to look to find the price of the one I like. It's a company that we've worked with a lot in the past, and I love their products. I'm just trying to find their radial runout gauge because that's the one I really like. I'm just trying to scroll through here. Okay, so here it is here. And this is a... I'm just trying to find the price. I don't want to try to do this. I'm not good at multitasking. Go to True Balance. That's the company that makes the centering sleeves we always talk about and the centering tools. They also have a good runout gauge because they understand how important it is to have one. Their website is tru-bal.com, and it's True Balance. So I was looking. I don't see a price on theirs there, but check theirs out. That's a good one. It's the one I use. There are ways to check we can check the rim when it's mounted, and then we can mount the tire and check the tire when it's mounted. Checking a tire off the assembly would require you to have some sort of a stand for the tire. The gauge could do it if you had a way to put the tire up on some sort of a stand. The way they work is it's a needle gauge, like a micrometer, you know, those types of measuring devices, and you mount it on a tripod. So it sits on the ground, you jack a wheel up on the truck, and if we're checking radial runout, we would put it right against, we would touch the needle up against the tread of the tire, and the device, the runout gauge is on this tripod, and then we would spin the tire, and as the tread either pushes more against the needle or moves away from it, you'll get a run-out measurement, and we're looking for under 60 thousandths. If we wanted to check lateral run-out, we would just move the tripod over to the side of the tire and put the needle against the sidewall and spin the tire. And again, the tire's going to move closer or farther away. We're going to get a lateral run-out. So it's a fairly simple device, but you want reasonably good quality so that it's accurate.
Absolutely. Okay, thanks, Kevin. Yeah, I wanted to make sure I was checking it with the whole assembly mounted on the truck.
Yep, we can check rim first, just to make sure the rim is true. Most aluminum rims will be, but we could still check it, then mount the tire correctly, then check the whole assembly on the truck. I think you might have had more questions, so I'm going to get to a break and I'll come back and make sure we've got them all answered for you. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. I'm going to go back to Pennsylvania. Brian, did that help?
Yes. Yeah, I had two more if I could.
Sure.
I was thinking about something. I don't know if you've thought about it before or researched it. I did a little research and didn't come up with anything. I was interested in the idea of a 24-5 ultra-low pro tire, kind of like the 19 or 17s or whatever that they put on step decks. In theory, that would have better rolling resistance than a 22.5 low pro, right, if we could come up with the same diameter. But I poked around with, you know, what I would think the size would end up being, and I didn't really find anything. Does that exist?
I don't think it does. You're on the right track. The shorter we make the sidewall, the less rolling resistance the tire should have. Now, that's theory, and there's all kinds of other factors going on, but the taller you make a sidewall, the more it flexes and the more energy we lose. So a very low-profile tire should be low rolling resistance. Now, we also throw in one other factor. The bigger, heavier rim has more unsprung weight, which adds to the problem. So we've got a couple things going on, and, you know, without some pretty extensive testing, I'm not sure what the answer would be. If the tire existed, I might be willing to try it, but I've never seen one.
Okay. And then my last question, you sort of reminded me of this. You're talking with somebody yesterday about summer sausage, and my big question with cured meats, of course they're great for ketogenic and they're real convenient for driving, is A, BHA, sodium nitrate, and whatever other things are in there, are they bad for us?
Well, here's the thing. Again, there's a lot of issues going on here, and hopefully I'll get through them all in my head here. Any food we put in our body, we want to get back to the least processed, most natural form of that product. So when I eat summer sausage processed meats, I'd love to start with grass-fed and pastured animals. If we start there, we're already way ahead of the game. Now I'd like to use more natural preserving processes and not a lot of, you know, modern chemicals. So if we do that, if we start with good, healthy pastured animals and we use the traditional means of preserving them, then I don't think there's any downside. And we could look historically and say, wait a minute, we've been preserving meat for tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of years, and cancer and most of these diseases didn't even exist. So it's not the fact that we preserve the meat. It could be how we preserve it. So we might want to watch that again, try to get the best sources we can. But there's another problem with all of the medical testing that's going on today. They could say that people who eat more processed meats have more cancer, but that doesn't take into account so many other factors. One, 99% of the people they're doing all this research and testing on are not fat burners. They're not eating a traditional diet. They're eating the standard American diet. So how can you point to one thing in their diet and say this is the problem? I think their overall diet and lifestyle is the problem. But we keep wanting to point at one thing and saying this is causing cancer. But it didn't cause cancer for hundreds of thousands of years. Why now? It's not the fact that we preserve meat. We've done that forever. It's a combination of so many things. So I do eat processed meats. I try to get the best quality that I can, but I'll certainly just grab some summer sausage from, you know, even one of the big producers, and I'll eat it once in a while. I just do the best I can to get the best quality when I can.
Okay. And then the sodium nitrate specifically, I'm guessing that's a fairly natural component. I remember reading something about, I don't remember which vegetables, but certain vegetables actually produce, what, as we consume
celery
them, more sodium.
One.
Okay. Yeah. Yep.
Celery is a big one. So even when you see nitrate and nitrite free, there will be always be a little addition to that that say, except those that occur naturally. Well, they do occur naturally. So, and they occur in foods that are very healthy. There's never been a true correlation between any nitrites or nitrates and cancer or other problems. Again, it's a lot of misinformation, misunderstanding of the information. But again, the overall message, stick to the best quality. Animals raised the way they were supposed to be raised and minimally processed. But I think that there's nothing wrong with preserved meats. Let's see. We're going to head off to the left coast. Enadina in California, it's your turn.
Hi, Kevin. Thank you for taking my call. I'm looking to move over to Landstar at the beginning of the year. And I was wondering, they don't pay on empty miles. So can I claim those on my taxes? And what do I want to watch out for when going to get my load on empty miles? Then I had one other question regarding.
Well, let me get to this one, because this one's got a couple components here. First of all, congratulations. You're going to love it over at Landstar. Second, you just brought up the single longest standing myth in the trucking industry. This one has been making me crazy for 25 years now, and it won't go away. No, you can't deduct empty miles. Let's just start there. That is an absolutely correct 100% statement. You cannot deduct empty miles on tax returns. Now, let me explain why, and I don't know why this rumor sticks around. Here's all the IRS cares about. You go out and make money. Somebody pays you money for whatever it is that you do. If it's a business, then you have expenses against that business. And what's left over is what you pay tax on. The IRS doesn't care how you earned it, how much somebody paid you or didn't pay you. They just paid you, and then you had expenses. You are deducting all of the expenses to run those empty miles. You're deducting your fuel, your maintenance, your tire wear and tear, tolls, anything that it cost you to run those miles are being deducted already because you deduct all of your expenses. The miles themselves,
right.
first off, if there's no revenue, there's no tax to be paid on those miles. You're not getting paid anything.
Yes, you're right. You're absolutely right. Now that you explain it like that, okay.
Yeah, so why this one sticks, and I have had people swear to me that their tax preparer deducts these miles. And I said, first of all, there is no place on a tax return to do it. It doesn't exist. But if you show me where your account has deducted this, I would love to see it. And then we look at their tax return, and it's not there. I don't even know where these people come up with this stuff. But if the tax preparer managed to find a way to do it by adding his own line on the extra lines or whatever, this would take about 30 seconds in an audit to figure out that it's wrong, and there's no way it would ever be allowed.
Okay. Now, how do I figure out so that that way I'm not running too many empty miles against what I'm actually making? Is there a system I need to, or is there anything I need to look out for?
Yes. For example, you know that I promote our software for keeping track of your numbers every month, and if you were to use that system or any system that gave you a good monthly report, here's the way I look at empty miles. I like to keep things simple. So for me, I set goals for my business. And let's use an example here. Let's say that you set a goal that you want to make $1.75 a mile for all miles you drive. Now, this is simple. I don't care if I make $3.50 on all my loaded miles and I make zero on all my empty miles, and I get 50-50. Let's say I have a dedicated run. I get paid one way. I don't get paid the other. I'm making $1.75. I don't care how many empty miles I have. It's meaningless to me. I hit my goal. So I don't care how I get to the goal necessarily. I set a goal. I track it. And if I get there, great. So let me get to a break. I'll come back, and we'll make sure that helped you out, and then we'll get to your next question. Stick around. Kevin Rothberg. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment. I'm going to head back to California. So, and Adina, that's what I mean when I keep it simple. I'm not going to try to track empty miles. I'm not going to get too crazy about setting some percentage. You know, I don't want to do more than this. For me, the easiest way to keep this simple, set an overall goal of all, I want to make this much for all miles I drive. Then that's all I track is just total miles each month and total revenue. And if I hit my goal, excellent. If I don't hit my goal, then I might look a little deeper and say, oh, you know, I'm doing really good when I'm loaded, but I do have a lot of empty miles. Maybe I could figure out a way to cut that down. But I don't need to really track it separately to do that.
Okay, great. Okay, I got that, Kevin. Thank you very much. Okay, and also, I switched my truck. It was already set up to go over to a 13 speed, and so I switched it over to the 13 speed. But when I split the gear into the lower end, my speedometer is going a little haywire, and because I like to run 55, and so when I also set my cruise, I noticed my truck is giving a little bit of fuel letting off. You know what I mean? The speedometer goes up a little, down a little, up. So, and that's in the high end. I'm going to be going back to the shop for them to look it over. So is there anything I need to let them have them look at?
Yeah, it one of the more common reasons for what you're talking about is a worn out speed sensor on the back of the transmission.
Okay.
I would start there. That's the easier one to get to. It's the easier one to replace. The two other points where it could get screwed up is in the ECM itself and in the actual speedometer head. But both of those are harder to check and not as common. So let's look at that speed sensor on the transmission first.
Okay, great. Do you think it was a good idea for me to transfer over to a 13? I had an 8 before, and the truck seems to be running good other than when I go into the low end. So was it a good idea to switch to that 13?
Now, when you say switch, was this a convertible transmission? So for a couple $100, they converted it over for you?
Right. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I always recommend that. People call me and want to switch, you know, physically remove a 10-speed transmission and put in a 13, and I almost never recommend that unless we need a transmission anyway. But on a convertible, 9-speed, 8-speed, depending on how we're referring to them and which gears we're counting, but the convertible 9-speeds, absolutely. Convert those over to 13 every time. It's anywhere from $200 to $500, and it's well worth it. Those transmissions are designed to be converted easily. Let's go to Utah. Gary, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. I just have a question on aerodynamics. Curious about that sun visor over my windshield that doesn't do anything. Can a person, does that create turbulence?
What truck, what model?
I have a 2000 Freightliner Classic that I pretty much converted over to an FLD, but it's just a longer one.
Got it. And the reason I ask for the model is some of the very aerodynamic trucks, they design the visor to work with the aerodynamics of the vehicle. But many visors are just slapped on to block light, and they have nothing to do with aerodynamics, and yours is one of those. On the Classic, there's no design on the visor that has anything to do with aerodynamics. It's just there to be a visor, so taking it off will improve the aerodynamics on your truck.
Okay. Do they make a visor that would be better for aerodynamics for this truck, or am I better off to just remount? Do I have to remount those five lights that are up there, amber?
The marker lights are required, yes. So you've got to figure out some form of replacement. One of the better, easier that I found that I actually like is they make lights on strips. So it's you don't have to do a lot of body work. They wire in pretty easily, and you'll still have your marker lights up there because they are a requirement. And no, they don't make a visor that will help the aerodynamics on that truck.
Okay. What about my dual antennas? You know, I was thinking about running them up inside of the cab up along over the sleeper.
Same thing. When we look at the aerodynamics of a vehicle, anything that will disturb the smooth flow of air or make the wind flow break away from the vehicle, those things are all what hurt aerodynamics. So there's a lot of things on trucks. If we could ever get rid of the mirrors and use cameras instead, we would see huge improvements, but DOT still doesn't allow that. Antennas, horns, lights, grab handles, all of those things cause turbulence. So anytime we can minimize or eliminate things sticking out from the vehicle, we're going to make an aerodynamic improvement. Now, many of them you'll never measure. I'm sure if we take those antennas off, there's not going to be any noticeable, measurable fuel mileage improvement. But there is an improvement. We know it. It's just physics.
Yeah. What about did anybody do any testing on, you know, what kind of mileage benefit you would get out of that visor, getting rid of that visor?
No, because there's so many different configurations. I have seen some pretty well documented, but they're individuals. So anytime we do something on one truck, there's always the chance that something else happened that we don't know of. But I have seen a couple well documented tests where people showed as much as a 3/10 of a mile per gallon gain by taking off a visor. Now, granted, it was one of those big, big honking, visors covered up about half the windshield.
That big old stainless steel one or whatever that they put up there.
Yeah. Yeah. So, again, we know that that's not an aerodynamic design, and we know if we take it off, it will improve aerodynamics. The other thing I've talked about that is even worse are bug shields. If we look at the way they design a vehicle to be aerodynamic, we want the air, the wind flow, to stick to the vehicle. We want it to come up over the hood to the windshield, from the windshield to the top fairing, stay against the top fairing, and then curve nice and smooth to the trailer. So if we think about a couple accessories, a bug screen is designed to take that airflow that's heading towards your windshield and deflect it away from the windshield so that the bugs don't hit the glass. Well,
yep.
If
the bugs
works,
don't hit it as hard.
Yeah, if it works, what it means is we just did exactly what we don't want to do in aerodynamics. We never want to break that airflow away from the vehicle. So I've seen bug screens that 3 4/10 of a mile per gallon. The wing type air deflectors that we put on the top of a flat top cab, they shoot the air straight up in the air. They break it away from the vehicle, whereas a fairing curves the wind the opposite way so that it flows onto the trailer, not away from the vehicle. So even devices that claim to be fully aerodynamic, like a wing, are anti-aerodynamic. They're doing exactly what we don't want them to do.
Yep. All right. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. And that looks like it's going to wrap it up for me today. I am all out of time. Just flies on these one-hour shows. So many questions, so little time, but when my time is over, I've got to get out of here. A couple things. I am your conscience this time of the year, getting you to think about things that you don't want to think about, but you need to. And that would namely be your accounting and your taxes. It's time to get them in order. In fact, you're late. Do not wait anymore. We're in December. You need those numbers before the year is over with. Now, we have programs that can help anybody in any situation when it comes to taxes and accounting, and we specialize in owner-operators and drivers. I've been doing owner-operator tax returns since 1990. We partnered with a great accounting firm, and we can help you. All you have to do is check out the website, letstruck.com. All the details are there, or call us, 855-800-3835. We'll see you next time. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. right, everybody. Thanks for joining us today. And now I can say tomorrow at 9 a.m., that's Pacific time, so noon Eastern time, an hour earlier than normal, we are going to do a special three-hour recording with Bruce Mallinson and the engineers and technicians over at Pittsburgh Power. So we'll be talking about things, but we are going to leave lots and lots of time to answer all of your engine and electrical related questions. We'll send out a text message, so plan on joining us tomorrow, 9 a.m. Eastern Time. We'll see you then. Thanks.